Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, if you've been listening over the last couple of weeks, you'll know that we have embarked on this world tour of global Christianity, learning about where the faith is growing across the world. And our tour guide is Miriam Aidney. She's an academic, a researcher, and author of the book Kingdom Without Borders. And so far, she's given us a glimpse into the faith of Christians in Africa, Latin America, and tonight, the world's largest nation, China, where the story is really quite exciting in terms of growth of the faith. Miriam, welcome once more.
Oh, thank you very much.
You've got quite a soft spot for China personally, don't you?
Well, I do have. My father-in-law went to China in 1934 from Britain, and there he met his future wife, who came from the United States, and they married and had their first three children there, and would have lived out their lives there. But in 1950, they had to suddenly leave physically. But I think they never left in their hearts. And so when I got to know this family, I started enjoying Chinese dinners right, left, and center every time.
Well, so do we here in Australia. I reckon it's so funny when you travel out to country areas of Australia and you find Chinese stores. I just think it's funny. It really is.
Well, yes.
You call China the kind of elephant in the room because it's growing to such a point where, it could well be the next world power. We've spoken to various minds who have suggested it could well be the next world power.
Well, certainly China hopes so, indeed. Yes, well, China, we all have to admire China for, it, among other things, its steady annual economic growth over the past 20 years, at least 8%, and sometimes as high as 14%. And through this most recent global recession, China has done amazingly well. And there are other things, of course, we have to admire China for in terms of history, 5,000 years of literacy, a certain set of habits that enable them to progress in a steady way, like taking the long-term view, mm-hmm. like emphasizing cooperation and community, mm-hmm. like action as opposed to passivity. And because they are so big, all of this means that they have a very great power in the world.
Yeah, very, very much so. And when it comes to the Christian faith, the statistics, now, they're always hard to measure because of the whole underground church phenomenon over there, which we'll get to. But what do you estimate it at?
Well, I'm very conservative, and so I say 80 million Christians. Many people would put the figure at considerably higher than that. But 80 million Christians is nothing to sneeze at, because these people have come to faith basically just one person telling another about the faith. It hasn't been any big program because, of course, they've been living under a Marxist regime, which is ideally a theoretically atheistic regime. Mm. Christians have been restricted, and yet in that context, we now have 80 million people of all walks of life.
Yeah, and is it true that the Christian church there is now larger than the Communist Party?
Well, I believe it was the last I heard. Now, I think they're sort of neck and neck, but I think that the Christian church is larger, yes, as far as I know.
Yeah, so yes. Which puts the persecution in a bit of context, doesn't it? Because, when you actually get those kinds of numbers, then, you will get parties that start to go, okay, well, we're starting to compete here in terms of power. When it comes to the churches, there are registered churches and underground churches, and then this third church that you talk about. Give us an overview of how those three fit into the context of Chinese Christianity.
Well, yes, as you've mentioned, there has been a state Department of Religion that was founded soon after the Communist Revolution, and it has been very anti-Christians in China connecting with Christians outside. It's been very emphatic about Chinese running their own church. But unfortunately, it has also had some other restrictions, like Chinese Christians are not supposed to teach children about the faith because the government hopes the faith will die out and so shouldn't teach the next generation. Chinese Christians should not teach about the kingdom of God at the end of time or anything about Jesus at the end of time because this doesn't go along with the classless society of Marxism. And also Chinese Christians should not be doing public witness other than just talking to their neighbors. And at times, Chinese Christians, I mean, and this happens now, too. It varies hugely from place to place and from year to year. But Chinese Christians are arrested now, as we speak, and imprisoned. Okay, so the state churches are limited in that formal sense to the extent that they cooperate with that, and they don't always do so. But in response to that, there has been very large, many millions of people who are considered to be underground church people. There are at least 20 very large networks of these. They have just not registered with the government, and so therefore they are technically illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are what we call the third church, the third church movement. This is churches that are not registered, but they are also not hidden. These are often better educated, urban, professional people who are determined to make China live up to its constitution, which guarantees freedom of religion. And so these people come out in the open. They're very active in, for example, serving disadvantaged populations like the many millions of rural migrants that have moved to the cities and aren't properly registered, so they don't have adequate access to health care and schooling and so forth. Well, these Third Church Christians will be active in going and helping them with health care and with setting up little schools and so forth. These Third Church bodies also tend to have quite a number of attorneys, lawyers, who are human rights lawyers, who are ready to defend anybody who is in need of human rights defense, which includes Christians, but others too.
This is Open House, right across the nation. Academic and researcher Miriam Aidney is with us, author of Kingdom Without Borders. We're doing this kind of world tour of global Christianity, and we're talking about the growth of Christian faith in China tonight. openhouseonline.com.au for the podcast. So, Miriam, there's some fascinating stories you've got in the book about how the Chinese people often believe that God had prepared the Chinese people for the message of Jesus even before it was actually brought to China. Give me some illustrations of that.
Well, yes. Many of them believe that even before the time of Abraham, there was a kind of some sort of preparation for God in the Chinese language. People who follow this view point out that there are certain symbols that, for example, the word for boat in the Chinese symbols combines the symbol for eight and the symbol for mouths. And, of course, the story of Noah is eight people who were saved in a boat.
Hmm.
And there are others that have to do with the symbol for righteousness has to do with a lamb, some other elements.
That's interesting.
Those who read Chinese get excited about what they see as meanings in the very pictograms of their so-called alphabet that seem to have some potential theological significance.
Hmm.
And, of course, others would point to some of the wisdom of Confucius.
Yes.
As being as part of God's creational gift of wisdom, incomplete without the further revelation in Jesus.
Because the idea goes that Confucianism talks about morality, and it says morality is necessary and needed, but also shows that we fall and we fail to meet that standard of morality.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. And, in fact, that's one of the things that Chinese intellectuals are thinking about now. There are many students, both in China and outside of China, who are coming to faith in Jesus, and part of this is because of their disillusionment with Confucianism, or the extension of Confucianism, because they had Confucianism basically teaches that if human beings apply themselves and get educated and try to practice virtue, we can be good. But unfortunately, in Chinese history, in recent times, most recently in 1989, about 20 years ago, when the students gathered together by the hundreds in the
Tiananmen
Central Square in Beijing, and at Tiananmen Square, and they were seeking greater justice, greater opportunities. They were peacefully demonstrating, and they were violently attacked by the military. And for many students, this was a very disillusioning time because they had tried to do things right, and they thought that the government would also treat them right, and they saw it as their loss of faith in human goodness. And quite a number of them have become Christians, the leaders of that time. Whereas they had thought, and some of them point back in their own history, they say, you know, in Tiananmen Square, we had good intentions, but we failed. And the Cultural Revolution of our parents in the 1960s and early 70s, they had good intentions too, but they failed very badly. And now they're called the Lost Generation because at that time, in the late 60s, early 70s, when the Cultural Revolution took place and it was trying to get communism back to its pure beginnings, actually young people were encouraged to denounce their teachers, their leaders, their parents, anybody that they felt was not perfect, actually. Hmm. And as a result, many of these older people were mocked and even tortured and even killed. And then the young people came to their senses and thought, what did we do? Hmm. And they are now called the Lost Generation. They have lost faith. But they had good intentions. And actually, the original communist Mao Zedong, the original revolutionaries, they had good intentions. And Chinese intellectuals look back at this and they say, look, we've tried. We need something more. We need God. And so they are coming to reach out to God. I actually, some years ago, was speaking here in Seattle, which is where I'm from, and I was speaking to a group of internationals on Good Friday and about the death and resurrection of Jesus. And afterward, a Chinese woman was talking with me. She was a student here. And she wanted to talk about some of the thinkers like Freud and Marx and Darwin and so forth. And finally she said, I knew some Christians in China, and they were good people, but I never really saw any need for the Christian faith until I came here to the United States, and then I realized that if you Americans didn't have Christianity, you would be a very immoral people. But she said, but we Chinese don't need Christianity because we're naturally moral.
That's interesting.
Well, but time has now shown many intellectuals that whether you're Chinese or American or anybody else, we're not naturally moral.
Yeah. Such a key point. So wrapping it up, strengths, weaknesses of the Christian faith in China, what are you seeing?
One of the strengths, of course, they have many strengths, but and they have weaknesses like all of us. And one of the weaknesses, I will say, is that they are growing so fast that they don't have enough teachers. And so there are some bad heresies that develop, some of them really quite frightening heresies. One called the Eastern Lightning Cult, where they sound like Christians, but if you discover after you're in the movement that they really aren't, you try to leave, you may actually be physically harmed. So there are some bad heresies because there aren't enough teachers and there aren't enough Bibles to keep up with the movement. But one of the strengths is their outreach to other needy people, that is to their workmates, to their neighbors, but also they have some big mission movements. One of them is called the Back to Jerusalem Movement, and this has been quietly going on since the 1920s. They realized that Christianity came to them about 600 along the Silk Road coming east, through Iran and coming east to them. And now they feel that they are called to take it back along the Silk Road, to so passing through the Muslim regions of Western China, through all the stans, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, so forth, and through Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq and Syria and Jordan, and eventually back to Israel. And so this is one of the inspiring and surprising things that we see in China.
Very much so. Well, it's a fascinating tour we're doing with you, Miriam. We've looked at Africa, Latin America, China tonight. We're going to look at what the Christian faith is doing in the Hindu world, and next week the Muslim world. We'll catch up with you then.
I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, Miriam Aidney, author of Kingdom Without Borders.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.